Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge, and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it, no set schedule and all that kind of stuff. So today I'm going to be finishing up a trilogy of books by Anne Leckie, reviewing Ancillary Mercy. Now, this is the third book, which follows up the multiple award-winning Ancillary Justice, which came out, I'm looking at Wikipedia here, it came out in 2013, and it won the 2014 All the Awards. And actually, when I read it at the time, I was like, yeah, this is definitely an award-winning book. It hit all those things, and I wasn't surprised that it won all of those awards. It was kind of surprising, you know, how many of the awards. I thought it would definitely win some awards, like the Hugo and Nebula and all the others, but it just won all of them, which is good. And then Ancillary Sword, which was the follow-up, and I reviewed that actually not too long ago, just last, I was kind of like a year behind on that one, and I thought I'd leave that one to review until I could read that one and this book back-to-back. But I put a bit of time in between, for a reason which I'll mention in a minute. But if you want to go back and find my other reviews of that, back on episode number 218, I reviewed Ancillary Justice and gave it 3.5 stars. And just, you don't have to go back to it, the kind of short version of that is that I really enjoyed the first half of it, where it was kind of like switching backwards and forwards in time and different kind of storytelling methods, like switching, you know, because the main character is a spaceship who used to have lots of bodies and a spaceship body and then lots of human ancillaries, which are kind of zombie humans being constructed, not really zombie, but, you know, human bodies that have been taken over by the artificial intelligence, by the AI that's running inside the starship and using them as ancillaries. And as they're called here, and it's sort of like hive mind kind of stuff going on there. Anyway, the spaceship called Justice of Toton, I think it's the name of the spaceship, that's killed. That whole spaceship is killed, and only one ancillary is left, and that ancillary is called Breck, and she goes on a mission. Anyway, the whole start of that book I really liked, where it was kind of like going backwards in time, and you can see Breck now in our current time frame, but also you can see how she was in as a spaceship with all different kinds of bodies. I really like that kind of, like, the first two-thirds of that. And then for me, it kind of fell apart in that last third of the book, where it suddenly just became, oh, right, okay, now we're going to go and meet the Emperor, the Emperor Ananda Mienai, and okay, so we got to go and sort that out, like, see what's going on here, and why did you kill me, take revenge, you know, find the answers, like that kind of stuff. And at that second part I didn't enjoy so much, but weird, looking at other people's reviews, lots of reviews were like the opposite of that. They were like, well, I didn't like it at the start, but it really ramped up towards the end. So for me, that was like an uneven book, and I gave it 3.5 stars. And then the next book, Ancillary Sword, was an interesting one, because, like, the mission that Breck had to go and take revenge and find the answers, and then she was like kind of won over by her mortal enemy in the first book, and was given a spaceship of her own. So then you had this weird thing of a spaceship being in control of a spaceship, and they went off onto a planet. And while I didn't think the story was quite as interesting, I thought it was a better told story, like in Ancillary Sword, this is the second book in the series, but it was very much more like, okay, we're on some space stations in one system, not a lot of traveling around, they go down and spend some time on this system, and it was a lot about, oh, proprietary and doing the right thing and being good people and drinking tea and going with powerful people. And I think one of the references that kind of seems like an influence on this was kind of like the early Vorkosigan saga books. Not early that they were written, but the early ones which don't feature Miles Vorkosigan. Although there are some kind of young, brilliant officer characters who kind of bring to mind that kind of character as well, in some ways. But the earlier ones, let me see, what would they have been? The Shards of Honor and Barriar, where it isn't about Miles Vorkosigan, but it's sort of like, yes, we have to do the honorable thing and do that kind of stuff. And it brought to mind a bit of that, and a lot about drinking tea and tea sets and growing tea, lots of tea stuff going on there in Ancillary Sword, much, much more so than in the first book. Anyway, so that brings us to... Oh, and also I gave that one 3.5 stars, not because I thought it was as good of a book. I just thought it was a more even book. I kind of enjoyed reading it a bit more. And there, it was an interesting storytelling device. Instead of Breck, like, seeing things from her point of view and, like, spreading around all of the different kind of hive mind ancillaries and into the spaceship and see what all the different points of view, she got kind of, like, dialed in to another spaceship's brain so they could, she could get all the data feeds, so she could kind of always see what all of her crew were doing at the same time. And I thought that was quite interesting, because while she was down on the planet, she was getting feeds from what the, you know, her lieutenants were doing on the ship and the other people on the thing, and she put an agent onto this space station, and she was doing stuff. You know, all these different people were doing things all around, and she was kind of like this focus point for the story, bringing all the data in. And I thought it was interesting storytelling in that case as well. Yeah, which brings us to the third book, Ancillary Mercy. And what I thought was interesting with this is that the first book, there was a very big difference. It's like a very different style between the first book, which was sort of like, yay, galaxy spreading, you know, empire, space empires, and it's big story, wide story, the story is spread out over, you know, in some cases, you know, thousands of years old, because the spaceship was thousands of years old, and then a few decades, and people were coming back from, you know, and characters who were thousands of years old interacting with each other. It seems very big, a very big story. And then Ancillary Mercy, the second book, it was suddenly like, oh, and now we're on a single planet talking about tea. And book three kind of picked up almost exactly where book two finished. And it was only once I actually got past a very annoying part of the story, first part of the story, which I realized, oh, this is actually really is all one story. The stuff that was happening at the end of book two and some of the things which I made it feel really small, but I was like, hey, but there's other stuff happening in this other system, the ghost system, what's going on out there? And there's all these other things which haven't been answered yet. And it's all answered here. So really, I think you should do what I've done here, is actually read the first book. It stands alone. And then the next two books complete the story, but you have to kind of read them back to back, which is a real pity, because the first, like, 15% of book number three is just people saying, oh, and as you know, this person in the last book did this and this, and this character is just... And I was like, yeah, but I just read that book. So in the end, I actually had to take a break for a while to kind of forget all of that stuff, or for it to, like, have a bit of distance, because I realized as this book was written, or the way it's been written is like, ah, okay, this book came out in 2013, this book... Oh, sorry, 14. This book came out in 13, and then 2014, the next book comes out in 2015. You're meant to have kind of read these a year apart, but when you read them like a few weeks apart or a week apart, it's like, yes, I know, stop going back over. Oh, and this character, if you remember, they did this in the last book and this in the last book, and then she met this person and she did this, and I'm like, yes. And so that was kind of annoying to read them back to back. But as I realized, it is very much one story. The story in this, but this is the weird thing, the story in the second book, Ancillary Sword, is very much wrapped up what the main focus is there, you know, about this tea set and going down into the, you know, and what happens down on the planet. They don't go back down onto the planet again, or not for more than, you know, half a chapter, because that really is finished. That doesn't really play into it. So, yeah, picking up on book three was interesting. And over the course of book three, it does go back into a bit more space opera territory. A bit more, you know, a bit more like, oh, okay, now we're going to do some military stuff, and there's going to be military, and the people are actually going to shoot at each other rather than just talk over tea a lot. But there is still a lot of tea, and the tea sets and all of that kind of stuff do still play surprisingly large plot points in a book, which you think is going to be about spaceships shooting at each other, and that does happen as well. So, so getting into it, I mean... I don't know really what to say. I didn't make any notes about this because this is, yeah, it just carries on. Like, if you've read the first two books, definitely just keep reading, because I think this book is actually a step up from the first two books. Not in terms of quality of writing, but by this time you're like, oh, right, okay, I know all the characters. I know what's at stake. When other characters turn up, you're like, right, I know enough about the situation that when this person turns up, I know how important it is. When this person dies, I know how important it is. So it really does rely on the first two books to be good books, whereas I think the Ancillary Sword, the second book, like, it kind of goes against the first book. Whereas this one brings it a full circle and goes, oh, remember what you enjoyed from that first that book one? Some of that's in here as well. And all the stuff that you enjoyed from book two, that's in here as well. And it's just much more, you know, a better balance, I think. So, and overall, it does wrap up the story, even though the last part, like the last chapter of this book is actually saying, well, and stories don't really have endings, because after the day when the ending is, well, there's another day, and what happens that day? And then there's another day, and what happens that day? What do the characters do after the story? And it was quite interesting to read the end of end of a story where they're just going, well, this could be the end. And it's like Anne Leggie, the author, she's just going, well, you know, I said this was going to be a trilogy. And I kind of wrapped up what I wanted to say, but, you know, it's not the end, because there's still going to be more stuff going on, and it really thinks that, oh yeah, we're definitely going to have more things going on. It does almost set up a bigger story than what we've had here as well. As you see, I'm trying to do this with as few spoilers as possible. What else do I want to talk about? Yeah, so the characters. What I actually liked more about this book is in the first book, there is, you know, there is only one main character, which is Breck, the ancillary who we're following through these three stories. And then there's sort of like someone who's died in the second book, you meet a sister, but not really that important, although it's important to the story, but the character isn't a big story. But there's Sivadin, I think is the way you read the name, or you pronounce the name Sivadin. I read this as a Kindle book, so I don't have the guide to the pronunciation, which is more handy. Does it have a spotlight feature? Sometimes you can go and look down here, down at the bottom. No, it doesn't. Sometimes on these Kindle books. Oh, no, X-ray. That's what it's called, X-ray. So you can look at people. Ah, oh, that's great. So Uren, so actually you can just look at how much people are named here. Yeah, so Sivadin Vendai. A lot of, as you can see here in the X-ray version on the Kindle book, lots of blue, which means she is in the book quite a lot. And what I like about this is that this book really becomes the conclusion to Sivadin's story, where in the first one, she kind of just shows up, and you're like, well, what's this character doing here? Well, I guess she's going to be important later. In the second book, you're like, well, yeah, she's around, but, like, what's actually going on there? And in this book, it does get, you know, that character really does get wrapped up, and I'm like, right, okay, I understand really what's going on with this character now, and it is an interesting character. Maybe not, like, the most likable, but at the end you kind of go, oh, right, well, the character progress is Sivadin realizing she may not be that likable and having to work through those problems as well. What else have we got here on X-ray? So, yeah, there's another ship that turns up, or an ancillary for another ship that turns up, which is good. And in the second book, in Ancillary Sword, there's one character who is which is the Preska translator, and the Preska is like an all-powerful alien species which kind of comes in and goes, oh, humans, oh, I guess humans aren't vermin, tell you what, I'll not just kill them all indiscriminately, let's set up a treaty. And that one of those translators, what happens to them in the second story really kicks off what happens in that second book. And here in the third one, another translator turns up, and I really liked the way that the Preska how that, like, alien species interacts. It feels like almost a comedy character, like a comedy relief character, but also massively important. In some ways, a bit too important, a bit too friendly. And we're like, well, if they're all like this, they should be all, like, why were they ever killing each other? And what's the big thing? And I do think one of the weaknesses of the end of this book, if there is going to be a weakness to the story in the book, is just how like the story seems to be resolved a bit too easily by, like, oh, and this alien is very powerful, and that's going to come in handy if you're the powerful alien's friend, and which is a bit not, like I say, it makes the end of the story interesting, but, like, slightly less satisfying that is what is being relied at. And there's Tissawat, who is a young lieutenant who had a lot of impact on that second story. That character, I think, going into the future of this series, Tissawat is going to be, I don't want to say it's going to be like a good character who turns bad, or like a character who is, but I think that Tissawat might end up being that, like, a main antagonist in the future. Maybe not a bad person, maybe not a villain, but definitely an antagonist. It's going to be someone that you got to fight against. As I was going through the book, I was thinking that. And then by the end of the book, actually, Breck, the main character in the book, is just like, and it's like, oh, right, this is someone that we've got to keep an eye on. I was like, yes, that's what I was thinking. I guess that's a sign of a good writing, that sort of conclusions that I come to about the character. The characters in the book also come to the same conclusion, seeing the same action as well, like that. Yeah, and there's some of the good characters. What people often referenced when talking about this book is the Culture series by Ian M. Banks, where it is like ships, intelligent ships, kind of doing more things, like doing, like having characters and doing things as ships and being involved with humans as ships. And for the in the first book, I was like, wow, this is nothing like Ian M. Banks. In the second one, I was like, wow, this is really not like Ian M. Banks. And in this third book, I do think the interactions between the stations, the ships, the ancillaries, the aliens, and the way that the ships are kind of talking to each other and kind of communicating with each other over the heads of the humans, like almost recognizing, like, hey, actually, we are very powerful. And humans are going, hey, you guys are really powerful. Do you mind, like, considering us humans? Like, there is even that conversation. It's like, well, who put you guys in charge? And the ships are just like, well, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? And this third book is much more like a culture book in that way, where the ships really come into their own. And that's what the book is about. It's about, okay, well, humans, they've got their side of the story, and ships have got their side of the stories, but what are ancillaries? They're not humans, they're not ships, and what are ships, you know, and all that kind of, like, what is intelligence, and what is human, or what is consciousness, or what, you know, what rights do artificial intelligences have, and things like that. And also, as apart from, like, these ship characters and these interesting, you know, human characters, just like the smaller characters, the minor characters, are just more, I don't know, they just seem to be, like I say, they kind of grow on me. Just a lot of them only have a number. So there's the Kalars, which is like a, they call them a decade, like a group of 10 people who work on the ship. They're like a watch in their own right. They work together. They have a function on the ship. You've got the Bow decade and the Kalar decade, and I can't remember the name of the Etrepa decade and things like that. So there's these three shifts on the main ship that we're talking about, and a lot of them just have numbers. And in that second book, I was like, okay, well, it's that number, I guess. Whereas this time, just by what those numbers were doing, I could kind of pick up on a lot more on their characters. And again, I think that's just been, well, these characters have been set out. So when I started this third book, it was kind of just, you know, it was like a cast of characters all doing things. None of them needed to be introduced. There was only like two, maybe three new characters that were introduced into this book, and the rest of them is like, okay, here's a continuing cast that we can continue on with. What else do I not really got much else to say about this book. I know it's a weird thing that I actually like this book more but have less to say about it. It's just like, well, yeah, this is the wrap up to the story. I mean, I could just say what the story was, but that's not very interesting, I guess. There are a few issues with the story. Like I say, it took a bit of time to start off, but, you know, there's actually just more action in this. There's less sitting around and drinking tea, even though that still is a big part of it. The ending is, it's one of those annoying things that I was like, wow, okay, so I've still got like 12% of the book to go, and 11, I'm like, wow, this seems like it's coming to a close. Like, what's going to be the big thing that happens at the end of this book, which makes it last another 10%, or like, is going to, you know, last that next, you know, 40, 50 pages that it's going to take me to get to the end. And you know what happens? The book ends and it's like, you might also like this. And there was like the introduction, the prologue and first two chapters of another book. That always annoys me in ebooks and in other books where they just go, and we're at the end. And now an encyclopedic appendix. And I'm like, oh, I thought I was going to get another 30 pages of story and it's an appendix, or it's a, you know, and that kind of, and oh, it's another book, the first chapter of another book. I'm just like, well, that annoys me, because I thought I had like another half an hour to read, and I'd put the book down and I came up and there was three more pages, and then I didn't have like a satisfying conclusion. Anyway, so there are some things at the end of the book where I'm like, okay, you've got to leave some questions unanswered to continue on with the bigger story. Most of the ends of this book, like the loose ends, are tied up, but in a way it's a little bit too neat by what happens, even while some of the characters in the book are going, hey, this is a little bit too neat, isn't it? This isn't going to last, this is all going to fall apart. And they're like, yeah, but we've got a little breathing space now. So I kind of like that, the neatness of it, and that it's, oh, this is all a bit convenient, isn't it? Which in some ways could be bad plotting. Feels it in the book when the characters are saying, hey, this is a bit too neat, and this feels a bit too much like this feels a bit too easy. Well, not too easy, but it feels a bit too, you know, wrapping up everything. When the characters in the book are also thinking the same thing as I am, I realize, oh, this is actually, I'm going to give it a pass, because I realize that there's a lot more story, a big more, you know, another big story to go at, you know, in the future, and that's what it's being set up for. But the conclusion, like, there's a big action sequence at the end, which I actually quite like. The storytelling where they're flicking around different places, these characters go away, and I'm like, well, how are they going to do this thing where Breck, you know, the fleet captain as she's known now, where she is like, oh, okay, so I can see what's happening there and can see what, but then she goes off into another system and leaves these characters behind. I was like, well, how are we going to continue on with this storytelling? And it pretty much opens the next chapter by saying, this is what happened when I wasn't in contact with these characters in this other place. And I was like, oh, okay, so we're just going to get it. And then a few chapters later, it's go, and then I came back and I got the updates from their brainstream updates, and I all came through very quickly. And all that stuff that you just spent two chapters reading about, I got all that in one go, and now on with the story. And I'm like, well, okay, I guess that was good. That was satisfying enough to get through that kind of thing. So, yeah, overall, I think the story of the three books is actually better than the individual stories in each book, and that's why I think this actually does make a really good trilogy. That first story, I say the running up to the ending of it, it all is like, it's a bit too neat, and I'm like, oh, I don't like the ending of that first story, because it's like, and you win a starship, now go off. And I'm like, okay, so Breck's going to be a starship captain, and now we're going to have some episodes of Star Trek or Firefly. What's going to happen? Are you going to be a renegade and go off here? What's going to happen? And it ended up different than I thought in the next book. But that made the first book stronger, that the kind of nice, neat ending where you get a title and you get a ship and you get a reward for this thing and you get a reward for that thing, you know, like, which often happens, especially at the end of fantasy books and military science fiction books. So it's like, and at the end of the book, everyone gets to be a commander and you get a ship and you get a girl and you get a boy. All of that kind of stuff going on. It always feels a bit too pat. And you become the prime minister and you become the advisor to the king and you become a wizard for some reason, you know. That kind of happened. But then the next book, like I said, that happened at the end of the first book. Ancillary Justice, Ancillary Mercy just turns out on its head. It's like, actually, you thought you know where this is going to go, and now it's going to go in this different direction. And that kind of sets you up for the end of this book, where it, like, that similar kind of things almost happens, but then there's even a mention of it. It's like, ah, you think this is going to go in this direction, but like I say, this is not the ending, and it'll probably go in a different direction. So I think having a, you know, a slightly cyclical story where you kind of isolate, I don't want to get into spoilers, but what happens at the end of this kind of does reflect what happens at the end of that first book, and you're like, oh, okay, another showdown, and I thought I knew it was going to go there, but it went in a different direction. And now at the end of this, at the end of the third book, I'm like, well, I think I know where it should go, but I'm sure in the next trilogy of books, which are going to come out in October over the next few years, it'll probably go in a different direction than I could think and what most people could think. So yeah, it's a better trilogy than it is a first book. And it's a better two last books than it is just that middle book. And yeah, overall, it's much better. So I'm going to up my rating of this particular book up to 4 stars. And if I was to rate the whole trilogy, I would also bump it up to 4 stars overall. Even though the first two books I gave 3.5 stars each, the unevenness of those two books are balanced out by this third book, and I think it is a good wrap up to the series. So I'd encourage anyone to read through it. I haven't given any spoilers in this one so far, and I won't through to the end because I've not got much else to say, except, of course, there are some things which people talk about this book, you know, and about the, and I've mentioned it, I'm sure, in the previous two reviews that I do, which is the personal pronouns, the non-gendered personal pronouns, or always using she to talk about everyone. And I just want to say, like I said back in October, whenever I read the previous book, and what I said in the book before that, this, for me, I like it not even just as a quirky thing that happens in this book, or as a statement on sexual equality, or a statement on all the things that there could be. I just like it as a storytelling device, that I can just read a book and not worry about who is going to be the love interest of who, or who is going to, like, what characters may or may not match up with each other, or what characters are going to be important, or what characters are not. Like, I read this, and the only way I could ever think, oh, would this person be male or female? That question it's not even, it can't even be in my mind. And then when I actually do think about it, it was like, well, this person is attracted to this person. So one of them has to be male and one of them has to be female. But this person kind of acts more male than female. So I'm going to guess that's kind of a male thing. But then that person is going to link up with it, you know, and it's kind of one of those logic puzzles where it's like, if this person is on this one and this side, you know, and you kind of arrange people and things. And then, but then I'm just thinking, well, no, that doesn't mean anything either, because it doesn't just get rid of like gender roles. It also gets rid of like all of the, you know, like sexual orientation and gender identification. All of those things just kind of gets thrown out, and it just concentrates on the characters and the storytelling. Like all these characters here, Uran, Orn, Basnade, Ekalu, Caliphive, Mercy, you know, Quetta, Savardin, Tissot. Like, I kind of, like, have maybe, like, if you were to press me, it's like, is this male or is this female? A lot of them, I just wouldn't know. Like, oh, they were involved with that person, so maybe they're opposite genders, but again, I wouldn't know. This person's called beautiful sometimes, but, like, there isn't, I mean, some people also, they're also called handsome or just good-looking or whatever, like, and I just like that. And again, I wish more books would just come with a filter just to turn everyone, like, to just go, okay, everyone give them gender-neutral names. Like, I don't know what Tissawat is, or Ananda, me and I. Like, I don't know what gendered names they are. So just give everyone non-gendered names, like, not John and Samantha, but just give them non-gendered names. Sam, that would work, I guess. And Joe, I guess. Joe and Sam, you know, like, non-gendered names. And then just call everyone she, and like it does in this book. Or come up with, like in other books, I mean, there was that one by Alistair Reynolds that I read the other day, like 2 years ago, probably, whenever it was, where they had a non-gendered character and it was V and Ver and that kind of thing. It's just like, just come up with something like that and it'll just wash over me. And then actually, I think just using she or just using he, she is probably better. It does actually make it better because it's like less in the way than like a new non-gendered pronoun. Like Z, I think I've seen one, XZ, or maybe I'm getting mixed up with that or something, but you know, it's one of those things that I just like it. I wish there was a filter that I could put on every book just so I didn't have to worry about this kind of stuff, which of course is slightly running away from the problem of, you know, actual, inequality in these kind of things in the real world. But if I'm reading about not the real world, if I'm reading about science fiction in the far, far future, yeah, it's okay to do all of that. Like, if I was reading about the current world, you would have to, I think, addressing gender and inequality and sexual orientation, all those other kind of things are part of our real world. But, you know, with fantasy books and science fiction, I think more books should just do this. I think there's no reason why not just to, like, at the start of the book, just go, roll the dice. What gendered pronoun are we going to use for this? He, she, V, Z, whatever. And we're just going to go with it. And, I think it would make for stronger characters and stronger storytelling, and kind of the ambiguity would make everyone a better reader and a better writer, or a better writer and a better reader. You know, it's actually more interesting to read books from the point of view in that way. Maybe. Probably not for all books, but I think it would work in more books than people do. Also, what else have I got to say? Actually, I quite like all the names. I think the names are actually quite interesting, the different names of the ships. I like the ships' naming conventions, and also the decades, like the shift, not the shift, what do you call it? The different watches on the shift. I actually really like having some of those. I'd be like Bow 3 and Kalar 8 and all that kind of stuff. And then sometimes they will be promoted and then they're like the head of the watch and then they get their real name back. It's like, oh, your name is actually Arthur. Of course, not in this book. Anyway, that is it. I think that's all I've got to say. Good series overall. Like I say, a better series than the first book made me think it would be, and the second book made me think it would be, but it's totally worth reading. 4 stars overall, and for this book, 4 stars too. Yeah, that's it for now on this book. Next episode is... What book is it? Oh, next episode will be episode 300. I'm going to get home after 6 weeks away, so me and Juliana will get together and do some fun stuff talking about... we're not quite sure what we're going to talk about or what we're going to do for a special episode 300, but that'll be out in a few days' time too. And the next book is probably going to be... is it The Children of God, which is the follow-up to The Sparrow? What's the other audiobook that I'm listening to? Let me just quickly look on my phone. It's the, oh, The Dying Earth by Jack Vance. I'm probably going to get to that because I'm listening to that. I actually listened to that as an audiobook early, like this time last year, early last year, and then just forgot to review it. And then it's been so long, I thought, well, it's only a 6-hour audiobook. I will just listen to it again and review it coming up. Yes. The follow-up to The Sparrow by Mary Doria Russell is, I also have that here, Children of God. But that's a longer ebook, 17 hours, so that'll take me a bit longer to get through. So you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge. You can become my friend on goodreads.com and follow along with my reading. And also I can see what you think about books. And actually, I was going to look here on answer. No, I'm not connected to the internet. I'm at sea on a cruise ship and internet is very expensive and I don't have very much left on my internet plan. So I am not going to reload Goodreads, log on and reload Goodreads again. But generally, I do enjoy seeing what other people think of books. When I've read a book, I can check out like the average of friends of mine on goodreads.com, which is mostly science fiction book review podcast listeners, and I really enjoy that. You can also check out the science fiction book review podcast listener group on Goodreads. That's where we chat about stuff and recommend books there to me there as well. And also, if you're wondering, hey Luke, are you going to read this book, have you read that book, generally 300 podcasts like RSS, the feeds, and iTunes isn't really built to list 300 episodes at a time. So generally, I think only the last 50 episodes or 100 episodes show up in the iTunes feed. And there's no real way around that. You know, iTunes was set up for when podcasts, like the oldest podcast ever, had like 30 episodes of it when iTunes was built. And like the iTunes podcasting system and that kind of stuff. And lots of podcast software, it just doesn't work. And also my WordPress blog, which runs Science Fiction Book Review Podcast, it just takes too long to go through and build the feeds and all that kind of stuff. I don't exactly know all the technological limitations, but putting 300 things in an RSS feed doesn't always work for iTunes and otherwise. So what you should do is go to sfbrp.com and click on episode lists. There's a whole page there, and you can sort the episodes by episode number, by author, by the book title, by the rating of the book, by the length of the podcast, and also by the size of the podcast, because that's also listed there. Links to all the blog posts, links to Wikipedia and Goodreads and Amazon and all that kind of stuff. And all 300 episodes, actually there's more than 300 episodes because there's a few special episodes and other appearances, SFF audio podcasts where I've appeared are also listed there as well down at the bottom of that page. So if you're wondering, hey, because someone said, hey, are you going to review this book by Brandon Sanderson? And I was like, I've just got to send a link to this same page again so people can click through and download the podcast. But that's the best way to see, have I reviewed it? Before emailing me and asking me, you can just go to this page, sfbrp.com/episodes-lists, and you will get there. Or just go to the website. You'll find the link right there. So that's all I've got to say. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.